Ladies and gentlemen, I am now recording. I will go live at 3 o'clock.
Okay, I'm showing 3 o'clock. Do you have that?
Yes, sir. We are live.
Okay, very good. So call this meeting to order. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of the City of Morro Bay Citizens Oversight Committee, acting as the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. It is Tuesday, May 19th, 2020 at 3 p.m., and we are conducting this meeting via Zoom. And Dana, if you could do roll call, please.
Member Alexander?
Present.
Member Beckman?
Present.
Member Bose? Member Bose, can you unmute your mic, please? Mr. Bose, can you unmute your mic to confirm you're here?
My name, okay.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, got it, sorry.
Member Johnson?
Present.
Member Spagnola?
Present.
Member Wiener?
Present.
And Chair Martin?
Present.
All members are present.
Thank you. Before we go to the committee member announcements, I'd like to just request that every person on this Zoom meeting, please mute until you want to speak, because if there's any noises in the background, it's going to pull up your picture and it might be a little confusing. So if you could go to mute except when you want to speak, that would help. So are there any committee member announcements? Okay, hearing none, we will move on to public comments. Are there any people in the queue, Dana?
Yes, sir, there are. And our first one with their hand raised is Carol. Go ahead, Carol, you're unmuted.
No?
There you go.
Okay, is that good? Okay, hi, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you so much. Now, my question has to do with the staff report of B2, and I have two questions. So, directing to Jennifer, can I speak now or should I wait till later? Hello?
You can speak now.
Okay. So, on the revenue table, which is on page one of this, or B2, what considerations did you use to develop your FY 2021 projections for TOT, sales tax, charges for services, others, etc., i.e., what was the basis behind those figures? 2, do you have monthly projections for each of these 5 revenue categories so our progress can be tracked? And how do you plan on presenting this information to the general public as well as council? And 3, have you developed a list of revenue-enhanced options for the public and council to consider? When will this list be brought forward to the council and the public? And then on the expenditures table, you've reduced salaries and benefits expenditures from FY 1920 to FY 2021 by 14.5%. Are the unfunded CalPERS liabilities accounted for here or somewhere else? What discount rates are you assuming for CalPERS? How often, when does CalPERS report the results? If necessary, have you identified areas for additional staff reductions? And finally, does the services line refer to the services provided by the city for which we charge? If so, you indicate a projected reduction of these expenses by 17%. What was the basis for these reductions if your revenue losses? If revenue loses? That's it.
Okay, Jennifer, before you go there, Carol, are you going to be able to stay with us till we get to that item?
I believe so, unless my husband's hungry and I got to cook dinner.
Okay. Well, we're actually going to be, I'm going to request that we change the agenda a little bit on item B. B2 would go before B1, so it will be early in the meeting. Your question is pretty involved, and I think Jennifer is going to take a little while to explain it, and it might be things that she's going to be addressing anyway when she gives her presentation. So if you could bear with us and just wait until that item comes up, I think she'll make a good faith effort to answer your questions.
Excellent. Do I need to repeat them at that time, or does she have them?
Well, hopefully she has them, or somebody, Sandy, or somebody else has jotted them down. But if there's anything that she misses, you can remind her at that time, okay?
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other public comments?
Yes, sir. Another one in the queue with their hand raised. I'll unmute them. And caller, you are live.
Yes, sir. This is Dan Sedley, a resident of Morro Bay. Hello?
Yes, sir. We can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay. My name is Dan Sedley, a resident of Morro Bay. I am shocked and opposed to increases to the cost of building the WRF. The mayor promised me in city council meeting that the price would not exceed $126 million. He guaranteed that to me. Now, since then, they want to say, well, there's things we didn't know about. You know what? There's things they should have known about. Had Carollo done their homework, such as other projects throughout our town that have occurred, they would have known that there was red leg frogs and the snails and the scopy that they had to deal with. They didn't do it. Carollo's not doing a good job. So Bakken Beach wants to charge us $1 million for delaying their project. This sits all on Carollo, and this is all negotiable. The rate payers of our town should not be paying for the incompetence of Carollo not doing their job. I'm absolutely opposed. I'm aware that this is negotiable, that this is not an absolute, that we have to pay more money. I've heard that upwards of $6 million additional is going to be added, maybe up to $135 million that our project, our WRF project, is being increased to, and I'm entirely opposed. We should be negotiating actively. And if we can't reach agreement, then we should be suspending our contract with Carollo at least, and we should be negotiating hard with Bakken Beach. They get $1 million for doing absolutely nothing because of a delay that was not caused by us. This is absolutely absurd. I represent the ratepayers of Morro Bay, and these automatic increases, these change orders. All of it is unacceptable. As I said, the mayor promised me this project would not exceed $126 million, and I expect that promise to be fulfilled. The endangered species is not reason for raising this. Carollo should have come up with that in the early stages of their planning. And that's my viewpoint representing the ratepayers of Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Zeke, do we have anybody else in the queue for public comments?
There are people in the queue, but nobody with their hand raised at this moment.
Okay. Thank you. Well, then we will move on to our item A1. Which is approval of the minutes from the April 21st meeting. Are there any changes or amendments to that?
One thing, I'm not sure we put it as an agenda item for this next meeting, but we were supposed to talk about the four additional roles that were given to CFAC by the City Council at their February 11th meeting. That's not in the agenda now, and it's not in the minutes either. And my notes from the meeting, I didn't write it down as part of the minutes, but I knew that was an understanding that we had with Jennifer at the last meeting. So It's not in the minutes, but certainly it should be, should have been in the minutes.
Jennifer, could you just comment on that?
You can certainly suggest an amendment to the minutes, and we can incorporate those in there if the committee agrees that was all discussed and agreed to.
Anybody else?
I don't know if we need to change the minutes. We just need to make sure we put it on the next agenda for the next meeting.
So I would just say this agenda is the WRF quarterly report. So to the extent the information is not in this report that you think would meet the needs of those additional requirements, now would be the time to have that conversation.
Okay, so Jennifer, basically you're saying that when we get to that item that Bill should discuss that with the rest of the committee at that time?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, but they'll leave the minutes as is?
That's up to the committee. If you don't think they're an accurate reflection of the discussion during the last meeting, then a recommendation to amend those would be appropriate.
So, Bill, are you going to make a motion to that regard?
I'll move that we approve the minutes as written.
Okay.
I'll second. This is Lois.
Okay, thank you, Lois. We have a motion by Bill and a second by Lois. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any no? Looks like it's unanimous. Okay, thank you. So I've had a request to take item B2 before item B1 because there's quite a few city employees on the Zoom meeting for that item, and this will free them up to leave the meeting sooner. So unless we hear any objection to that, that's how we'll proceed. All right, so item B2 is a discussion and input on the draft proposed fiscal year 2021 operating budget. And Jennifer Calloway, tell us the sad news.
Sad news indeed. First, I would emphasize these are still, preliminary draft numbers. We're revising daily and double-checking things daily to make sure we have everything covered. So if you see some slight variances from the next version that comes out, don't be surprised by that. COVID-19 has, had a devastating impact on our finances. We've discussed that multiple times and had a study session on that on April 28th, forwarded all that information to the committee for your review. Being a heavily dependent tourist economy, we've lost significant TOT revenues and significant sales tax revenues. So we've been taking all of that into account, with it being, more difficult to make these forecasted projections, given that we don't really know or didn't know, and it changes daily how long the closure will happen or what the reopening is going to look like and what impacts, that will have, how quickly people will start coming back in to town, even though we're not advertising and encouraging people to come to town right now. We're doing the opposite. We do have a large number of people that continue to come, but the revenue streams aren't being generated from that. Takeout is a little different than a sit-in dining service, and the retail's not open. So that, and then gas prices are low, so that impacts our gas tax revenue as well, and sales tax. So there's multiple layers and factions to this that we are attempting to take into account. We based our revenue projections off of a bunch of different sources. We looked at TOT and historical data during the recessionary period and made some assumptions based off of that. On average, it is about a 52% reduction in TOT by each month. We don't track TOT. We track TOT monthly, but we don't hold our projections to that. And especially given 2021, in that if we have a second surge in the winter or fall, summer may be better than we expected, but winter and fall may be worse. So We kind of look at it as a total figure, about $1.852 million. It's a little bit more than 52% of what we collected in a normal year during the normal part of 1920 and 1819. For sales tax, we did a similar analysis with looking at recessionary data from 2008, 2009. We looked at some data as we were pulling out of the recession for 2012, and then also worked with our sales tax consultants, HDL. They've provided updated estimates, and they've taken into account estimated amounts for deferral of the sales tax receipts, which we all know the state has indicated or stipulated that we won't be receiving sales tax for 90 days to 12 months, depending on the size of the business. So that impacts cash flow, but has also been taken into account in some of these considerations. If the business is closed, we don't know if we will ever receive some of that money. Our property tax, we worked with the county on those estimates, as well as the trends we're receiving for this fiscal year so far. And then charges for services is really based off of what we've seen happen in the last couple of months with our with the COVID pandemic, city facilities being shut down, limitations on activities that can go on. Still not fully understanding what's going to be able to happen with recreation services. So we've made some broad assumptions there. And did our best guess as to what that might look like in the future. Particularly charges for services is one that we'll be able to monitor pretty closely to see how, on a monthly basis, how we're trending. Again, because we don't know what the fall might look like with a second wave or a second surge of this, as some predict may happen, we'll be going through all of 2020-21 in a very conservative nature and manner. Given that we are reducing revenues by $3.5 million, we had to make some pretty substantial and dramatic cuts to our operating budget. We've tried to highlight what those cuts are. Salary and benefits, $1.6 to about $2 million in savings, and that's from a number of different factors. We've had salary concessions from our city council, city manager, department directors, management group, unrepresented group, police officers association, and our service employees international union, which is our consolidated maintenance engineers, planners, that group of anywhere from 8 to 5%. Those concessions go through December 31st, and then we will be renegotiating contracts with those that are represented, but really looking at where we're trending and how we are doing, and have more information at that time on the whole COVID situation and what we can maybe expect going forward. In addition, we had three or four vacant positions that we've frozen. There's a police officer position, an associate planner position, and a consolidated maintenance position. Those have all been frozen and essentially defunded in the upcoming budget or the proposed budget. And those are all general fund positions. So that's direct savings to the general fund. We issued layoff notices at the very beginning of the COVID pandemic to over 70 part-time employees. Those were primarily in recreation services, as we weren't allowed to have those services. And last week, just prior to issuing this report, the city manager issued layoff notices to 8 employees. And then a notice to one employee that her hours would be reduced to less than full time. And those are all people that have positions with the city and are currently working that won't be working as early as mid-July. It's a 45 to 60 day notification process, depending on what association they are in. Those were 2 management employees, and the rest were in the SEIU group. Or represented under that group. So that resulted in a substantial savings of about over $500,000 in the layoff category. So that's had a dramatic impact, and you know, the city's worked hard at identifying what those positions will look like going forward and how we'll cover those services. We really focused on preserving frontline services to the extent that we could. But obviously a $3.5 million revenue reduction is going to impact service levels when we think about corresponding expense reductions. All of the departments were directed to go through and reduce their operating expenditures to the to basically bare bones, knowing that we needed to have as much savings as possible. So a significant amount has been reduced out of contract and consulting services, meaning that if there's an issue with street trees, we usually have a line item or some money set aside in contract services to address those if it's not something our city crews can do. That's been taken out to a very minimal amount, and if there's an issue that arises with a street tree, we'll have to address that on an individual basis as we go throughout the year. Same with items such as sidewalk repair, sidewalk grindings, development review, all of those kind of contractual services that we utilize throughout the year have been reduced significantly. There are very few memberships left in the budget, very little training money left in our budget, only trainings that are for, like safety trainings that are required for our employees have been left in the department budgets. Our reserve component for the fire department has been reduced significantly to identify some savings there. And we are asking for a Measure Q to contribute $40,000 to purchase asphalt so that our city crews can continue to do some road repairs and help us maintain our maintenance of efforts that is required to receive our gas tax or SB90 money. So that is in the staff report. With respect to some of the questions from Ms. Truesdale, our unfunded liabilities, what is included in the salary and benefit numbers is the unfunded liability that is owed for the 2020-21 fiscal year. Our 10-year forecast, when that's presented with the entire citywide budget, will include projections for the out years. At this point, we don't know what impact PERS will have as a result of the market crash. They did make up a significant amount, however, not their entire losses. The discount rate that's assumed is 7%. They have not met the 7% at this point, but again, we don't know what those impacts will be. PERS has not given us much guidance on that, and it typically takes about 2 years to see that through the actuarial reports. I think I might have covered many of the other comments that Ms. Truesdale made, but if I didn't, I didn't start writing down until about question number 4. So, Carol, you're welcome to remind me of any of those questions if I missed them. It is important to note and keep in mind that the 2020-21 budget cycle will not be like any other that we've done, I would say, in probably the history of the city. We do quarterly updates, but those we'll be doing more monthly in-depth reviews of our budget and updates on where we're at and where it looks like we're going throughout the year, just given the large number of unknowns and uncertainties with the pandemic and how it's playing out for our city particularly and the revenues that we have generated from tourism. All of the directors, I think, are on the line and available to answer questions about some of the specific things that they've cut from their budget. So you're welcome to ask any of them any questions you may have. And again, you know, these numbers will probably be modified slightly as we move into the entire citywide budget and getting that developed and double-checking and triple-checking all of our figures to make sure everything is accounted for and budgeted appropriately. With that, there's questions.
Thank you, Jennifer. So you mentioned a Measure Q item And we looked at Measure Q's budget last month. So what I'd like to do is to kind of separate that off and have questions and then discussion about that item before we talk about the general budget or the general fund budget. So let's go to committee member questions. And let's start alphabetically with Homer. Do you have any questions about the $40,000 Measure Q allocation for asphalt?
None whatsoever. Is that enough would be the one question. And if you recall from the last meeting, I wanted to transfer the whole $300,000 to the general fund. So I think that's a reasonable thing to do. And since there won't be any pavement management plan this spring, the more work that the staff could do, the better off the city will be.
Thank you, Homer. Bart, do you have any questions?
No, and I have no objection to that either.
Okay. Bill, how about you?
No objection. Agree.
Okay. Lois?
No, I fully support that. And I assume we're going to talk about Homer's proposal in light of the fact that there's one unfunded police officer position in the proposed budget.
Okay, thank you. Barbara?
Support that.
Thank you.
$40,000 transfer for the SB 90 match funds.
Okay, thank you. And Tina?
No questions, and I support.
Okay. So, Jennifer, it sounds like you've got unanimous support for that, so run with that one.
Thank you. We'll include that for the next version of this draft.
Okay. So now on the general fund budget, questions from the committee members. Let's start with Tina this time.
Thank you, John, but no, I do not have any questions.
Okay. Barbara?
No questions. The staff report was very good. It explained everything and the answer to the previous questions in advance of the meeting. Thank you, Jennifer.
Okay. And Lois?
I agree with Barbara. I thought it was very well done. And, again, I'm just concerned about the police officer position.
Okay. Bill?
No, I have no concern. I thought it was done very well. It's been a big, big challenge, certainly for Scott and laying people off this last week. And those people, the challenges that they're facing, I don't know what other activities the city can provide to help those people who are now laid off. And these are, I guess, they're furloughed for a period of time. And the expectation is, it's a question that they would be brought back on once budget enables us to do so.
The way our layoff process works, and Dana's on as well, so she can jump in if I misspeak, but there's a 45 to 60 day notification period. There are bumping rights, if you will, for people with seniority that have held a position in the past. So there's a period of time for them to give notification if they're going to bump into a lower class position, which could result in somebody else leaving. And then they are on the rehire list for up to a year. So should the budget situation change and we are able to bring back our tourism manager, for example, we would be able to call and offer them that position back up if they haven't found another position.
Yeah, thank you for that.
So, Bill, that's all done. Okay, thank you. Okay, how about Bart?
John, my comment was not specifically the general fund, so I will address that at the appropriate time whenever you feel that's appropriate.
What was the subject of your comment?
My comment basically had to do with the capital improvements. That is a section that, per the response, it indicated that will be the next go-round that you'll include that. My thoughts and comments are that while the general fund has been decimated by the COVID financial issues, on the flip side of that, the unbelievably low interest rates. First of all, getting the loan was excellent. It was lower than what we expected. And then financial concerns by the administration and then furthered by COVID have driven those interest rates down to, what, 0.8 or something, and the SRF is going to be 1.3 or whatever, something very, very low. So it provides us, in my opinion, an unbelievable opportunity to use this funding, which could be used possibly to save some of these people's jobs, to the extent that they can skill set over to supporting added infrastructure improvements. We've got the money, potentially there are people, but I think it's a tremendous opportunity to take advantage of those low funds. Now, the higher the capital cost keeps going, it obviously keeps cutting into that opportunity that was created. But my point is that when you do address this issue, I think there are opportunities for employees, for job creation in the county, and to fix our aging infrastructure.
Thank you, Bart. Homer?
I thought that the staff report, along with the individual department overview, did an excellent job of explaining each department's budget position. And so that's, I don't have any questions because that information was so detailed. Thank you.
Thank you, Homer. Jennifer, I have a couple of questions for you. On the revenue side, so the county is limiting hotel occupancy to 50%. Given what we saw this last weekend with people on the Embarcadero and down at the Rock, are you forecasting that we're going to run 50% for the summer?
My summer estimates are about 52% of receipts last summer, during a typical, normal, busy summer. The one caveat and concern I have about that is that right now the daily rates for hotels are also about half of what they were last summer. So a room last summer that was renting for $200 a night is now renting for $100 a night, for example, which obviously then means less TOT for the city. The county's order starting this weekend is 50% occupancy. It is still restricted to many of the same categories. There is still no recreation or leisure travel permitted under those orders. And I can send out the link to the county's information page. That might be helpful. So even though we're seeing a lot of tourists in town, and we have limited ways to enforce or prevent that from happening, I'm not sure that the 50% order will really increase our TOT any more than it is right now, and especially in light of how low the room rates are. So those are a variety of the factors playing in and why. Well, we'll monitor TOT on a monthly basis. If we receive more TOT in May, for example, than I thought we might receive, I'd be hesitant to increase our expenditures accordingly until we see that trend happen for a few months, several months in a row, because of the daily rates and how those might change and what the businesses might be doing to encourage tourism once we're reopened and allowed to do that.
Okay, so I imagine you have a line of communication open with the hotel owners to be able to ferret out how things are going. I mean, summer starts next weekend, pretty much.
Summer starts next weekend. Our city managers communicated directly with our hotels, vacation rentals, and RV parks twice and during this pandemic, asking them not to rent facilities during this time. We are closely working with Erica at the Chamber of Commerce, and she's, connected tightly with the hotels. So we're all trying to collaborate and work together. But we do have these orders from the county that we need to abide by or try to abide by. So, we continue to message that despite summer starting this weekend, we are still not open or welcoming visitors at this time.
Okay. And then on the property tax revenue, has the county told you that property taxes receipts will be going down, and is that because of income producing properties, or what's the reason for that?
So they gave some early projections that were a little bit less than our budgeted numbers for 1920. And then in reviewing our receipts this year and looking at the transfer tax is one I think will be most affected, as, you know, sales I expect will start to slow down and diminish. And then we do expect to see a little bit of decline in property values maybe going into next year. I don't know that, I have $312,000 as a reduced revenue for property tax. I don't know that we will actually see all of that in that category. Part of developing these numbers is I've kind of looked at them as a broad group as well. So maybe my TOT is a little over-optimistic and my property tax is a little pessimistic. And it's a balancing act, and that's, again, why we'll be having to look at it really closely every month. Property tax doesn't come in, equal installments throughout the month, so that will be a harder one. We'll be working and having more meetings with our sales tax consultant as they see the sales tax come in a little more, quicker than we do on our end, and they can have some better projections than we'll have. But we're trying to balance out between all our categories and where we think we'll have enough money or where our revenues will fall.
Okay, thank you. And on the expense side, on the unemployment insurance, does the city participate in the state program, or are you on the reimbursement program?
Dana, correct me, but I believe it's the reimbursement program.
I'm sorry, was that question for me?
Our unemployment?
So, Dana, the question was, does the city participate in the state unemployment insurance program, or are you on the reimbursement program?
I apologize, I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's reimbursement program.
Okay, so I mean, that's going to be a pretty significant expense then. I mean, eventually.
There will be costs associated.
Because the state will send you a big fat bill.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And then on CalPERS, this is one of the things that Carol asked about. With the lower payroll, the future year rates are going to go up because, of course, contributions are divided against the payroll. And with the lower payroll, you're going to end up with a higher rate. CalPERS is going to get their money one way or another. So I guess my question is, would the earliest that would kick in would be fiscal 21-22, or would it be even the year after that?
I expect it would be 22-23. It is usually that two-year cycle. When we do our unfunded liability piece of PERS right now, you know, the normal cost is based on projected payroll as well, and they give us a percentage for that. For our unfunded accrued liability, we get a flat number. So let's say it's $1 million for our miscellaneous classification. I take that $1 million and spread it across all of our miscellaneous employees and turn it into a percentage of payroll as well, so that it's kind of a fair distribution. So every time we change our salary and benefit schedule, whether it's reduced salary concessions or another position that's going to be vacant or defunded and laid off, it involves going back and changing all those UAL percentages to make sure we've met our $1 million requirement. So that's some of what will account for any changes you see in the salary and benefits as we move forward into the next version of that. But the short answer to your question is, I think we will see it in 22-23.
Sorry, there was a little bit of a blip on my side. I didn't catch the last bit of your sentence. But okay, so last question I have is in regards to the employees who were laid off. They can continue with the city's health care plan on COBRA. Is that something that the city helps them with, or are they just on their own for that?
Helps in terms of payment, you mean?
Right, yeah, in terms of financially.
No, we provide them with all the information on it, but it's up to them to pay for that.
Okay, all right, thank you. Those are all the questions I had. So Carol asked some questions in the public comments portion. Zeke, can we get Carol back to make sure that we've covered all her questions?
Yes, sir, just a moment. Okay, Carol.
Hi there. Jan, you did an outstanding job. This has not been an easy task for you or the staff, and I compliment you. I know many hours, sleepless nights that you and staff have probably gone through. So, have you just developed a list of revenue-enhancing options for the public and the council to consider?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I did forget that one. We had done a revenue option study session about a year ago, I believe, when we presented the 1920 budget. And as part of our April 28th meeting, there was additional. There were kind of the same revenue options revisited again. So the ones that weren't implemented, council did provide some direction on. Being interested in RV camping, for example, possibly paid parking, sale of some of our properties. So staff is working on following up in each of those items. And then our city manager has a roundtable that he has established to kind of give him advice and suggestions and recommendations going forward on revenue enhancement options. As we look towards the recovery efforts from the COVID-19 pandemic. So that committee has met twice already. Mr. Alexander is on that committee. And there's about six or seven others on the committee as well. It met twice, probably meet at least two more times in the next few weeks. And then I believe maybe have a report or recommendation to the city manager that he can share with council.
Thank you, Jennifer. One more question about the TOT. Watching the finance meetings and council meetings, the TOT group or the hotel years were given a stay of having to pay for it, like 60 days, I think it was, or 90 days. I can't remember. My random access memory has failed me. That money, have you put those possible projections into your report, or is that not something you do until you see the money?
So that they had a forgiveness, if you will, or a deferral for February and March payments. Those payments, they did have to submit what the payment amount would be, report to us how much they owed, and they are due by August 31st so that they can be accounted for in the current fiscal year. So when I did our TOT projections for 2020-21, they're based off of what we expect to receive, but also for the months of March, April, May, and June, I really looked more at 18, 19 numbers and kind of, took that 50-ish percent of what we received during the normal year. But we have accounted for them in the sense that we expect to receive the amount of the deferrals that were reported.
Thank you. I have no more questions.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you very much for having me.
So this is the, we're going to go public comments on this item. Zeke, is there anybody else who has raised their hand?
Not at the moment, but give them a second. No, I don't see anybody.
Okay, thank you. So now let's go to committee member discussion. Lois, you brought up an item about the police officer. Is that something you want to pursue at this point?
We had quite a healthy discussion about it last month about using Measure Q to help shore up the shortfall in the general fund. So I think that our conversation sort of led us to let's wait and see. I don't know if we want to continue to do that. Jen, what's your recommendation there?
I guess I'll defer maybe to, I think the chief addressed the impacts of having a vacancy and what that does in terms of the department for overtime. And the city manager is on the line too, so he can address it. It's certainly in the purview of this committee to make the recommendation to fund the vacant police officer position. I believe that's about $140,000 with full benefits. You could recommend moving forward with that. At this point, likely they wouldn't come on board until the start of the fiscal year anyways, given the recruitment process and background process, but the chief can speak better to that. So that it would align with the budget cycle. My only concern would be not knowing how long this recession and recovery period will last. Once we fund the position, maintaining funding for it until we have we rebound essentially and recover from this. And if we don't, and it takes longer than we anticipate, we're back in a layoff situation potentially. That would be my only caveat and only warning. And Scott or Chief want to weigh in on that, they're welcome to do so.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and let Chief also explain the impacts to his operations. I wholeheartedly agree with the statement made by Finance Director. We don't know if there's going to be a second wave. I think we're all kind of predicting there will be one, but this is a new pandemic. So only history will judge at this point. So if there is a second wave and we have to go into a prolonged shelter at home period again, you know, we may be in a position where we've hired somebody and have to let them go, which would obviously be devastating to that individual as well as the police department. And that's something that the chief and I discussed at length before we move forward with that decision to hold the vacant position. So it's largely an insurance policy. You know, I think I'd be more comfortable if it was a mid-year decision, perhaps, after we've seen if there was a second wave of COVID and another prolonged shelter at home order period. And if there isn't, or if there is and it's not as bad, then perhaps moving forward with filling it at the mid-year time is sort of my take. Chief, you want to go ahead and explain sort of where you're at operationally and sort of staffing levels?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So as you know, we had several officers that left the agency recently, two that went to a neighboring agency and one that retired. That left us three positions down. We filled two of those positions, and those two officers are in the field training program. Which takes them several months to get through that program before they become an actual effective officer on their own on the street. So technically we're still those positions down while these officers are in training. And I agree both with our finance director and city manager. We have one of the advantages of our city team is we have these conversations in depth almost daily. We're in communication all the time about what's best for the organizations as a whole. And I would agree with Mr. Collins. We would hate to bring a position on in the uncertain financial time that we're in and then have to turn around and lay somebody else off either within my department or in the city department as a whole. The other two officers, hopefully, they're progressing great through the field training program. I see great promise in both of them, so we're going to have them out and about shortly. I will tell you, I have another gentleman that's going to be retiring in the next month or two. And we kind of had the foresight to look ahead and do some backgrounds on some other viable candidates. So we're looking to be able to fill that position as he prepares to leave in the next month or so. Now, again, that does leave us with the current vacancy. Our calls for service have increased related to the COVID. Unfortunately, a lot of those calls are due to COVID. And again, just the general nature of some of the other things taken you know, in our state with zero bail and prisoner releases and all of those things that have a general impact on police services in general. So it has created some impacts as far as having officers available. Right now, we're still managing to respond to all calls for service, handle all of the traffic that comes in. We do see some challenges ahead of us in the near future, especially when we're going to go live with a couple of marijuana dispensaries. So depending on how those come on both the medical side and potentially the adult use side in the near future. So we do realize that there's going to be some challenges, but I do agree with city staff that to throw somebody else into the position right now in this uncertain time, we could, you know, in a month or two be looking at something more drastic than what we're in, and then have to pull those reins back in, and that would be a little harder to do.
Thank you very much for the thorough discussion.
I've got a question for the chief. He's brought this up the meeting before and this meeting, and that's the early release of prisoners. Obviously, the understanding that I think the general community has had, at least certainly myself, is that those being released are not hardened criminals or repeat offenders. And it sounds like you do not agree with that assessment of decisions being made on people being released. Now, there's also the issue of safety, too, for these people. But can you give us a little more information on your perception of people who are being released? Because you've indicated the last two meetings that this is adding to your workload.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I guess the perspective is, what's an important crime to you? And when it comes down to what determines what is a important crime or a violent crime, so to speak, there are some that we obviously in law enforcement and this in a larger group, because we have these meetings weekly in our chiefs and sheriff group, there are several in there that we would classify as violent crimes. There are several of those that are being released into the communities that we would consider to be hardened criminals. People that have been institutionalized and have kind of made a history of going in and out of the system. The zero bail, again, as an example, there are at least to the immediate south of us in Slo PD, in talking with that chief, I know that they've arrested the same guy three or four times just since his zero bail thing took place, and they've been unable to keep him into custody, and the judges are not increasing the bail at the request of what we call a bail enhancement. So it absolutely has an impact. And again, the definition of whether it's a violent crime or a hardened crime, so to speak, really comes down to the perspective and sometimes of the victim, because while some people perceive things differently. And I'll give this example. We recently talked yesterday with some other staff about a gentleman who had been arrested in four consecutive weeks for stealing four consecutive cars, one a week. Now, most people wouldn't consider that a serious crime. However, if that's your car and that's your mode of getting your kids to school or getting you to work, or, you know, that is an impactful crime. And although they may not have taken it by gunpoint or they may not have physically assaulted that person, that is considered a significant impactful crime on a victim who that may be their only method of transportation. So again, the perspective, oftentimes in law enforcement, we have to look at what the victim has and what they're going through, and then what the judicial system itself is able to do to help that victim. And again, when those people can be rearrested and re-released immediately, you know, you kind of get to where your hands are tied. So it's very difficult. It's hard on law enforcement across the state, across the country right now, but it does have a local impact as well.
My understanding correct, Chief, that by being short one person, it's going to be a bigger burden on the entire department. And although people are getting overtime pay, it really doesn't cover that when folks are having to give time and time spend with their family. And my thought, I would assume you would agree with that. Is that in fact the case?
Yeah, it, absolutely. The overtime does have an impact, not only on the budget, as we have discussed, but more importantly, like you said, on the fatigue and the wearing of the officers. Mm-hmm. And again, as an example, you know, this Memorial Day weekend, we've had a lot of pushback from community members just about having a heavier presence. So I'm going to be bringing in additional officers this weekend for Memorial Day. That means those officers that would have typically been on a day off are going to continue to be working their days off on overtime to come in and do that. Because, again, we have three positions of officers that are not solo officers, so they can't be utilized in the field by themselves. That means the officers that are working are going to have to come in and fill those positions until these two complete their field training. So it does have an impact on personnel as well. One of the options that we'd like you to consider is bringing on, we have a gentleman that's been in the background process, and he's kind of been waiting because this position has been frozen. And with the announcement that our employee here that's going to be leaving in the next month, I think July, the first week of July is his effective date. We would like to maybe utilize those funds to bring on the new guy and get him into the training process and hopefully get him, you know, training before this other officer leaves, because that puts us right back into another vacancy. And again, other officers are having to come in, make up that ground and do that work that officer who will be leaving will no longer be here to do.
So I was going to recommend that. So I'm happy to support that.
Yeah. Another thought I had was, you know, the community is so appreciative of the wonderful police department that we have. I mean, there might be some way the community can certainly be aware of the additional burden that's being placed upon the department, being short one person, and have a fund that people could donate to. And then you could use that as you see fit to go just help folks out a little bit or give them a little reward occasionally. And I know we'd have a lot of people eager to donate to a fund like that. I have no idea how one would set that up, but just a possible thought.
Right. That's a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Are there any other comments from the committee members on this issue?
This is Tina. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, Chief, so did I, to Lois's point there, did I understand correctly that you are asking that this particular committee support the idea that we help fund an early onboarding of this person in your queue to overlap with the person who is retiring? It's a specific request, correct?
Correct. And this might not have been the right channel, but this was something that just came up over the last few days.
No, it makes total sense. But would that be a specific use of Measure Q funding, John? I post that question to you. In other words, to Lois's original suggestion of funding the empty position, which obviously we discussed at length and won't work practically for very good reasons, is it now being suggested that some Measure fund funds be used to help this transition of the new person into the retired person's role?
It sounds like it. I don't think that Jennifer has proposed that to the committee yet, but let me just ask Jennifer. I think the way the numbers stack up for Measure Q is there was going to be a fund balance of $180,000 roughly at the end of 2021. And now with the $40,000 for asphalt, it'll be about $140,000. So it's good that there's that little bit of a reserve there so that something like this comes up and the police chief needs to have some money to accomplish this transition from a retiring employee to a new employee. It's good to have some money in there and not draw the whole thing down to zero, you know, not plan to draw the whole thing down to zero at the beginning of the fiscal year. What are your thoughts on that, Jennifer?
Yeah, so I'll just refer to this, and I don't probably, Chief, sorry, it's probably not the right terminology, but as an overstrength position, if you will, it's that overlap of having somebody on board in FTO process knowing that you have a person retiring and vacating the position. Since depending on, I don't know the timing of how quickly the person in the queue can come on board, You would likely have some of those costs be incurred in this fiscal year. It sounded like, based on the chief's comments, because we're not doing pavement management this year, that money was going to be transferred, or what money might remain at the end of the year because of that would be left in fund balance. So we would have approximately $250,000-ish at the end of this fiscal year that's unallocated that could help cover that overstrength position and that training period for that officer that comes on. I would know, given the amount of time of the FTO time it takes to be in the training, it'll cross fiscal years a little bit. So we would just charge that training officer or the officer being trained for that period of time in the Measure Q fund. So you would be able to see that directly. And then once he or she is released from the training experience, the cost would get transferred into the general fund upon the retirement of the person in July, if that makes sense. So I think it qualifies for a Measure Q expenditure and an appropriate use of money and that it's public safety. It makes a lot of sense from maintaining services perspective and maintaining the number of officers we have on the street and available to be independently out there and on call. So the committee can make that recommendation or support that today, and we would incorporate it in the budget, the next draft that we're attempting to prepare for the end of this week.
Thank you, Jennifer. And based on last month's discussion, I would imagine that probably there's not going to be any opposition to that idea. Does anybody want to comment negatively on that thought? Okay, so there's a pretty good reserve in Measure Q to be used for things like this, and I'm glad for that. And it sounds like the committee would definitely not oppose that use, and you would incorporate that into any kind of budget amendments that would go to the council.
Correct. So we're revising our budget and trying to get the next draft out for council next week. So hopefully Friday is the deadline for that. If it sounds like that's the will of the committee, so I'll work with the chief on his estimation of timing of when that person could maybe get on board to do a rough estimate of how much salary and benefits for that FTO time period. It's 6 weeks, correct, chief? 6 to 8 weeks? Oh, no, 16 weeks? 12 to 16.
The retirement date for the detective that's leaving is July 9th. The gentleman, like I said, that is in the queue has been on hold, so realistically, I could have him ready in 2 weeks.
So we'll estimate out the cost for that, and then that, you know, for the duration of his FTO experience, and include that in the budget for the overlap in 2020-21, and then we'll bring back any costs for 19-20 when we do our final year-end close budget adjustments.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer. Is everybody okay with that?
I am. I'd like to make sure, because of timing, we don't meet again for a month. So is there a motion that basically we're saying, yes, go ahead and onboard this individual as soon as possible? We're probably talking on the order of $10,000 or $12,000, I think, depending on exactly how quickly that person would come on board. So we don't have time to come wait for a meeting next month. That's what I'm saying. So how do we say yes without a specific request or proposal from the committee?
I think the motion or the recommendation is to direct staff to move forward with that presentation to provide to the council with the budget, 2020-21 budget. And then this committee knows that you'll also see a budget adjustment for 19-20 when we do meet next time and we are doing our year-end close budget adjustment.
I believe we won't be having a June meeting. Is that correct? Our next meeting is not till July.
Our next meeting was scheduled till July, or moved to July, based on our new meeting schedule.
Right. So, is there anyone opposed to that idea? Okay, Jennifer, I think you ought to run with it.
Okay, we've got our orders. Well, Chief and I will coordinate on those.
You don't need a motion?
Homer,
there's really nothing specific. I mean, we don't have a dollar amount. We don't have an actual hard plan or anything like that. So it's just a general concept. I'm not sure you can really make a motion on a general concept.
Just put it in the minutes that we agree to, yeah. Jennifer, moving forward with this approach to fund person out of the remaining money that's in Measure Q.
I'll communicate in our staff report to the council that by discussion and consensus of this committee, the recommendation is to fund an overstrength position for a period of 16 weeks or however long it is until the to provide for training before a retirement in the department. And we'll have a number associated with it at that point.
I'm sorry. We're saying 2 weeks, so that takes us to June 1st to July 9th is about 5 weeks. So where does the 16 weeks come from?
Well, I think it's 12 or 16 weeks on FTO, but you're right. It would be up until the retirement when the vacant position exists.
Yeah, because when the person goes, you stop paying them on the 9th.
Right. That's correct.
But, John, wouldn't we want to say that, give a little bit of direction? In other words, I would think to fund the balance of this year, the money would come out of the $180,000 would come out of the reserve, the carryover from the prior years, and to fund next year, the money would reduce the pavement management plan amounts and increase the amount that we're already funding for the police department.
Yeah, to Bart's point, though, if the retirement's like July 9th or early July, it's only about a week or a week and a half in 2020-21.
How about if we just make a general motion that the Measure Q fund balance be used as necessary to keep the police department staffing as full as possible?
You're implying that you could use the whole thing, right?
Yes, right. Well, we don't have any numbers in front of us right now, so we really can't be specific as to what we would be approving in dollar amounts.
Okay.
The committee has said that we don't like seeing the police department short-staffed, and that Measure Q is a reasonable use of money for that purpose. And so I think the staff can just take those concepts and do the right thing.
Okay. I'm not personally agreeing to that logic, because I think keeping some monies for things that are going to come up is good. I'm agreeing with the thought of hiring this one person as soon as possible to, you know, minimize the time without the people on board. So I'm agreeing to 10 or 12,000 personally. But there may be those who want to put the 300,000 like Homer in. But what I'm agreeing to, what I would vote yes for with the motion, whatever it turns out to be, it's going to be less than 15,000, probably closer to 10, I would presume, to support this person on.
Okay, so would you, with a $15,000 cap, would you make a motion to that effect?
Certainly. I make a motion that we allocate funds across the two fiscal years, up to $15,000 to bridge the gap to bring an officer on board to replace someone retiring on July 9th.
And do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. Okay,
I have a quick question okay. For the chief. Is this fellow you've got in the queue, is this guy coming in as a Tier 2 or Tier 3 perishable employee? Because that might affect Bart's your number.
You know, I believe he's going to come in at Tier 3. I'll have to confirm. I know he had a year's experience in Fresno and then got out of the job. But I'll have to see where he thinks. But I'm gonna say I believe he's coming in at tier three.
I can support Bart's recommendation. How much was it, Bart? Was it 20 grand?
15.
Is that going to be enough? You'll make it work, right?
We'll make it work. And if it's not enough, we'll come back and ask. But we understand what your intention is. You're not intending right. to use the full fund balance.
Right. And I think we're looking about a 5 to 6 week window by the time we – he gives his notice at his current employer and comes in. That could take a week or two. So we'd be looking at about a 5 or 6 week window.
And realistically, this will go to council on Tuesday. So we're not going to be issuing a "we're ready to hire you" notice until after a discussion with council.
Absolutely.
On Tuesday as well. So I think we understand your intention. The 15,000 is probably within the realm. The only thing I would ask is, Chief, is July 9th the date, since that was specifically mentioned in the motion?
Yes, his okay. written notice of retirement is effective July 9th.
Is that a firm date, or can he change his mind between now and then?
Well, he's putting it in writing and submitted it to us, which we've accepted. So I've had multiple conversations with them in regards to this, because I always fear that, that I get somebody else in the process and then somebody decide that they want to change their mind. But he's adamant that he's going. He submitted it in writing as July 9th as his final effective day.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Do we have any more discussion? Okay, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so motion carries 7-0. Okay, so the rest of the budget in general, we don't have a motion or a second yet on the rest of the general fund budget. And I think what Jennifer's looking for at this point is just some comment and feedback. Homer, how would we start with you with a discussion on the proposed draft general fund budget?
Oh, based on everybody's questions and their comments earlier, I think we could move to a motion. And I propose that the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee review the preliminary draft of the general fund budget and thought that the staff did a terrific job putting it together, considering the environment. I just add one more sentence, that the Finance Committee did not have the opportunity to review the enterprise funds or capital improvement budgets.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, so discussion. Anybody have anything they want to discuss in that regard?
Ms. Barbara, I agree and support that motion, especially based on the timing and the information we currently have.
Thank you.
I guess this discussion item, one thing that's not mentioned with the things that are being reviewed, but I know it's being considered, is the sales tax increase. If that were to be put in the ballot in November and pass, that doesn't probably take much effect until later in 21. Is that correct, Jen?
That is correct. We wouldn't start collecting that tax until January, and then with the delays and how we've received sales tax, it wouldn't be until the end of the fiscal year or start of next fiscal year.
So it doesn't affect the budget, right? Yeah.
And, of course, you can't plan for something that hasn't been approved yet by the voters. Okay, so all those in – did we take a vote on that already? No. Okay, on Homer's motion, and who was the second?
I seconded it.
Bill. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Bill. I'm sorry. So all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, 7-0. Thank you.
John, before we move, can I make one final comment?
Sure.
The major Q fund is going to be left between what is unassigned. $8,000 was taken out of the $325,000 for pavement management fund, with about $450,000 of, lack of a better word, uncommitted money. And I just think that that should be information that the city council should know, that the money is there, and if things really go south, it could be tapped pretty easily. I don't know how, I'm assuming our liaison will communicate that with the rest of the council.
I would imagine so. Yeah.
And just to be clear, we had intended, and maybe I didn't understand this correctly, leave that $300,000 just sitting for the pavement management plan. We weren't going to designate it or transfer it over there yet, and kind of put that on hold throughout the year. So the fund balance won't actually show the $400,000 because we have that still programmed in there, but we'll communicate that it's in abeyance until we know further or on hold.
That's my understanding, Jennifer.
Okay.
Okay, so let's go back to item B1. Which is the quarterly water reclamation facility report. And Jennifer, you are the author of that report, so we'll start with you, please.
So our project manager is available, and he's going to go through the presentation on the report. Please keep in mind that this is the report through March 2020, scheduled to be received for April. But as you know, we delayed that given that we were all reacting to COVID and understanding how work from home was happening and approval and review. So the information in this report is only through March 2020. We've provided some information on the debt service, and welcome any feedback on thoughts or additional information or concerns you have about the other, the four additional items that were added for the WARF review. So that I'll ask Mr. Caceres to go through his presentation. There were a number of questions submitted. We've provided responses to those, so we won't go through those individually for the matter of time, but you can bring up you can ask any questions you like after the presentation. So, Eric?
John, an option. Maybe we need to go through this for the general public. If so, that's fine. I think those of us on the committee, we saw this in advance. So an option would be to have Eric highlight key aspects of report, which may have not necessarily been obvious, or we can do the normal thing and go through it. I guess if somebody hasn't had an opportunity to review that for the agenda, and it's certainly possible, then we should do it. But that's an alternative, and that's to just highlight it rather than go through the entire report, which many of us have done in detail already.
Right. So, I would hope that Eric would kind of give us an abridged version of it, because it's already 4:15, 4:18. Probably should end the meeting by 5:30 because we've got another meeting this evening. So, Eric, if you could abbreviate things and just hit the high points, knowing that we've all read through this already and had specific questions, and if you want to address those specific questions, that would be helpful too.
Great. Yeah, thanks, John. I prepared a fairly short presentation, kind of in line with the typical presentation for the quarterly report. So good to see everybody, at least remotely anyway. And I'm going to go ahead and share my screen here and pull up the presentation. And we can, like I said, we'll go through some of these things, but please feel free to stop me and we can have some discussion. So I trust everybody can see my screen. So thank you guys for having me here this afternoon to talk about item B1, which is our quarterly update report. As Jen mentioned, the information in this report is through the end of March of 2020. We delayed the development of the report, partly due to COVID. The other issue is that as we're getting into construction, there's a general timing thing that we want to talk about in terms of when the report would be delivered, the timing of the CFAC meeting and the timing of the city council meeting, and the time it takes for us to kind of review those construction invoices and everything on a monthly basis. And we can get into that here towards the end of the discussion. But we're asking you here today just to receive the quarterly update report and provide any additional questions that you may not have already provided. So in overview of the report, just real quickly, our general practice as it is on a quarterly basis, the CFAC receives a kind of the City Council CFAC, they receive the same report. The bigger report is in the quarterly months. The first and second months of each quarter are more just an accounting of the actual expenditures that have occurred in those months. But we do kind of the budget reconciliation on a quarterly basis. And then again, the budget and schedule are re-baselined annually at the very end of the fiscal year for the upcoming fiscal year. So a number of the things in the report are comparing the performance in this upcoming quarter to the last fiscal year. Just some summary of the project status. As most people have seen, the current project estimate exceeds our baseline budget of $126 million. That's kind of at the high level on the budget side, and we can get into some of those details. Several major elements of the project are behind schedule for different reasons, and that puts kind of the overall project behind schedule. And say the overall project, we have a lot of ancillary components to the project. But what we're obviously we need to keep laser focused on is that TSO compliance date, which is our regulatory compliance requirement, which is February 28th of 2023, is when we need to have the water reclamation facility in operation and treating water up to secondary treatment standards. Our current schedule shows that occurring on June 15th of 2022. Just a little bit of budget history. This is something that we include in the quarterly report and the monthly reports, but it shows the original budget that was put together at the end of fiscal year 17-18, which is about $126 million. The individual quarterly numbers, and then you can see the annual rebaseline number that occurred at the end of the last fiscal year, and then our current budget estimate, which is about $130.6 million. So why has the budget changed? You'll notice, and it's a little bit of an accounting issue that we have to deal with here, based on the timing of when we're bringing some of the project changes to the City Council, and showing some of the funds to fund some of these potential change orders that we've talked about and we will talk about here with PWAB tomorrow. Would be a little presumptuous before we get to the City Council level. So the way that we've really reflected some of that increase in the budget is in increase to contingency, and then that contingency would be drawn on if and when the City Council approves the PCOs. But essentially $3 million of the increase is being attributed to the water reclamation facility, the design build project itself. Again, we can get into some of those details as you see fit. We have some additional biological monitoring and archaeological pre-construction testing and monitoring requirements that we've added in to make sure that we've got adequate budget to get those things done. We've learned a little bit since we started the construction for the water reclamation facility, and then we've obviously gone through the Section 7 consultation with Fish and Wildlife. And both of those things really apply to both the conveyance facility portion of the project as well as the injection well or the recycled water facilities portion of the project. And then some general project costs. We have some additional costs for legal that we've added in. We have some things that we're going through with some eminent domain of some property and some other things that are taking additional legal costs. And then we have the WIFIA closing costs that we had originally had assumed would be wrapped up in the WIFIA loan that we carried separate. And so that's another item that we've had to add into just kind of the overall project budget. One of the things that we wanted to do was we wanted to put this budget increase into context. And so Working with Barta Wells, who authored the original rate study in 2018, in June of 2018, worked with Barta Wells. They did a update, a financial analysis update in the fall of 2019, in looking at the impacts of SRF funding on the project. So if you can remember, when we put together the 2018 rate study, we did not assume that roughly half of the project would be funded by SRF, because we had not yet gotten the assurance from SRF that we would be funded. In 2019, we made that assumption. And then we did an analysis just in this last month, and looking at 2020, and did a reanalysis of the debt service. And what you can see is the project budget on the top line, $126 million was used as the basis of the 2018 rate study, roughly the same in 2019, in November of last year, and then they updated $130.6 million. And you can see the total debt proceeds underneath there. And the total amount we anticipate taking from Lithia and SRF has gone up. The total debt service payments over the life of the loan have gone down pretty significantly, and that's really attributed to, one, taking advantage of the SRF funding now that we've been placed on the fundable list, and then also, as I believe Mr. Alexander mentioned earlier, the very good interest rate that we were able to receive on the Lithia loan when it was finally executed. We looked at these savings in a couple of different ways. One is we looked at them in terms of present value and brought them all back to today's dollars. And you can see the difference in the debt service in terms of present value. And then we also look at the maximum annual debt service payment over the life of the loan. The debt service payments change from year to year slightly, depending on the funding source, but you can see how much that maximum has gone down with our current funding situation. Some of the key accomplishments, as I mentioned, it's been a long effort, but we finally signed the loan agreement for about $62 million with Lithia in March of this year. We completed the Section 7 consultation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife for the California Red-Legged Frog, which was a big milestone. We completed the 90% design for the water reclamation facility, and then on March 20th, we issued a notice to proceed. Obviously, one of the challenges and why we're looking at a budget increase is a number of change orders. Again, we're going to be getting into the details of those with PWAP tomorrow night and with council next week. And I can answer some questions about those this evening as well, if you wish. And then the other one is a permitting process with CDFW that we're currently dealing with. I can answer additional questions about this as well. But this is really something that we never anticipated. And had to get into kind of earlier this year, and we've been dealing with this situation. It's having some impacts on the construction project currently. We completed the 90% design for the pipeline project. Again, trying to expedite the completion of that project to get it out to bid. A couple challenges there. We've talked about this a number of times, but we've got some issues with obtaining some of the easements from Vistra and PG&E. We've got some good information on PG&E. And we're going through the process with Vistra. And then the recycled water facilities, we've had some delays there because of accessing the Vistra property, which we were able to do and have continued our hydrogeological investigations. Again, project dashboard, it really, there was an error in the report that was sent to CFAC, and I apologize for that. But in the column that's labeled current, that's the third from, excuse me, the fourth from the left-hand side, that should say Q3 FY1920, not Q1. The numbers were correct. The heading on the was not. And so that compares the current budget and current situation to the baseline situation that we had at the beginning of the fiscal year last June, July. This figure here shows our planned versus current versus planned expenditures. This shows our cash flow for the overall program. And as you can note, the blue has that tail that goes out into the end of 23, beginning of 24. That is reflecting the shift in the schedule for the recycled water components. Again, the construction of the injection wells. Noting that those two diamonds there show essentially the compliance with the TSO, the original compliance date with the TSO around the beginning of 2022, and then that shifting now into June of 2022, as I mentioned earlier. Current expenditures to date, The current expenditures total is about $19.5 million for the program or for the project over the life going back to 2013. Actual expenditures for essentially contracts the city's currently or has previously managed is about $17.6 million of that total, which leaves about $1.8 million for city costs. Schedule overview shows that our schedule performance is a 0.94. That's also reflected on the dashboard, again, showing that the overall project is behind schedule, and we're about 70% complete through the entire schedule going back to 2013. Some of the major milestones for the project, you can see the baseline schedule that was developed at the beginning of 2019 and what we're currently showing for a number of the key milestones. One of those that I will draw your attention to is the bid advertisement, I think, is for the conveyance facilities. The pipeline project was originally planned for February 21st of this year. We're now looking to advertise that project at the end of June. The recycled water facilities is also pushed out. Again, that's something that we're working to recover schedule there as the hydrogeo work moves forward. But in terms of the critical path items, really want to draw your attention to the conveyance facilities and the water reclamation facility itself. In terms of schedule recovery, if you look at the schedule that was provided in the previous couple of slides, it's also in the report. The task six, so potable reuse permitting, is behind schedule. We're working to expedite the Title 22 engineering report, which is critical for the project. Getting that through the Division of Drinking Water, planning to submit a draft of that here at the end of June. Conveyance facilities doing everything we can to expedite bidding for that element of the project. We dropped an intermediate submittal there, going all the way from 90% to a bid set. We have received the final set of drawings for the conveyance facilities. We're doing a review with city folks tomorrow afternoon on that. In terms of the work on-site improvements is really to get through this permitting process with CDFW, which is kind of our biggest hurdle right now, and is really the only thing at this point in time that is impacting our ability to do work on the site. Again, recommendation is to receive the report, and then I can answer any questions, or can bring up any of the other questions that were previously asked in correspondence.
Hey, thank you, Eric. Let's start with Homer on the questions.
Eric, did Federal Fish and Wildlife ever send a biologist to Morro Bay to walk around the site?
Sorry, Homer, I'm trying to figure out how to unshare my screen. Oh, there we go. Sorry about that. No, CDFW, which is kind of typically the case, will send, and I'm assuming you're talking about California and not U.S. Fish and Wildlife, since that process is kind of closed with the federal government.
No, I was actually interested in, even though it's close, I was interested in federal, whether or not somebody in Washington, D.C. bothered to come out to see if there was a frog before we spent $3.3 million.
No, nobody from Washington, D.C. came out to the site. We are expecting EPA staff to come out to the site eventually. We were planning, obviously, to do something around the start of construction. We would have WIFIA staff come out, but because of the COVID-19 situation, we're not. But no, a biologist never came on site from U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Has the local office of California Fish and Wildlife, have they shown up to look around?
The folks in Ventura have not come to the site to look around.
So basically nobody knows if there's ever going to be a frog out there.
That is correct. The rationale that was used was our project doesn't necessarily sit, well, most of the county is designated as prime red-legged frog habitat, but where our site sits is known as kind of transitory habitat. An area where frogs would transverse during different times of the year. And that's kind of why Fish and Wildlife ended up latching on to the project and making us go through the consultation process. And I will let everybody know that as of now, when we started construction in the rainy season, March 20th, we have not had any take, which is essentially, well, we have had no observations of any red-legged frogs, and we've had any, we haven't had any take, which means we've had a frog try to get onto the site or anything where a biologist has had to come and touch the frog and relocate it and get it off of the site. Or we have a frog that's been run over by construction equipment or something like that. So so none of those instances so far.
Thank you for the answer.
Anything else, Homer?
No, I just think it's incredible that a Washington bureaucrat can go ahead and charge us $3.3 million for something that they didn't bother to really look at.
Well, it sounds like it's really more the state agency. It's the state California Department of Fish and Wildlife Services.
John, there's kind of two separate issues there, John. And the first one is U.S. Fish and Wildlife, because it's a federally funded project, the federal government has to go through a consultation with itself for any area that another federal agency may have jurisdiction. So we typically wouldn't interact directly with U.S. Fish and Wildlife on a project unless there was some extenuating circumstance. But because it's being funded by the EPA and by the Clean Water State Revolving Fund, we had to go through that process. So we notify them. We make our position. Our position was that we were going to impact but not significantly adversely impact any endangered species. They did not agree for the red-legged frog, which put us into this whole situation. Now, the other situation with California Department of Fish and Wildlife is usually very straightforward and one we deal with a lot, which is we make a determination about what areas on a project we think would be jurisdictional, meaning for California Department of Fish and Wildlife or the regional board, those would be waters of California. And then for U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, that would be if we identify a water to be a water of the United States. We put together a delineation report back in 2018, our biologists did, identified a feature on our site, which our biologist has always maintained this position and never wavered, that this erosional feature is not jurisdictional. It's not a water of the state or a water of the United States. And that is the disagreement that we currently have with California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And maybe to Homer's point, we have asked that a biologist from their side come out to look at the what they're calling an ephemeral stream, what we would lovingly refer to as a ditch, and they have not come out, but we're going through that process with them right now, and hopefully we'll have that wrapped up very shortly.
So which agency is requiring you to build a $900,000 perimeter wall?
That is the federal government. So likely the situation with California Department of Fish and Wildlife, really what we've been able to do is we've been able to start construction on the site. We've just had to avoid this erosional feature in the short term. So it hasn't had a huge impact on construction yet because we've had other things to do. The federal government is the one that's required us to build a $800,000 wall around the project.
Thank you. Homer, any more questions?
Well, no, the only reason I bring that up, I think it's really important that the public understands, and I'm hoping our liaison communicates this at a city council meeting, that more than half of this $6 million change orders had absolutely nothing to do with the city staff or the project team, but it had a lot to do with a bunch of overzealous bureaucrats in Washington.
Thank you. Bart, any questions or comments?
Looks like you're muted, Bart. There you go.
Okay. Just a few comments. I did submit a lot of questions, but relative to the presentation, something that I think needs to be understood by the general public, we used to use a term called committed costs as opposed to expenditures. Basically, while we may have $17 million worth of expenditures, if one were to say, why don't we cancel a project right now for whatever reason, and I know there are those who think we ought to do that, committed costs basically are those commitments we have made. So even if you said stop now, particularly to Overland and Black and Veatch, we are committed. So I would suspect, and even the cost that was expended from March until now, there's probably another $10 million of committed costs. So once we said go, and at some point here, Overland, Black and Veatch are going to start ordering equipment. So those aren't going to show up as expenditures, but they are committed. So we are into this project. Secondly, relative to the reschedule, I look forward to that so that I don't have to have my numerous comments on the schedule. So I look forward on July 1st that that means that they're basically developing that schedule as we speak. So the schedule, the integrated schedule, will be on schedule on July 1st. So going forward, we really can use that schedule to see how well we're doing, because in effect, again, everything will be on schedule July 1st. Now, relative to my, what I call comments, observations, and questions, let's say I had some concerns on responses. There was some editorial license taken to how the wording was of some of my questions, so they were not characterized. They weren't repeated, in other words. As an example of one, I was concerned relative to table 15 about the time schedule order milestone summary. We have missed a few dates that were on the compliance. And my question was, have we received approval that that's okay from the state water board? And the answer was, we've made a request. Well, my question was, and where I mean, these are pretty significant items. We need to be in compliance. And the answer to one was, well, we've made a request. The answer to the other date we missed was, we have not made a formal request. Well, the point was of my inquiry was, I'm a little concerned that we've got compliance dates that we're not putting in writing. We're not getting in writing that that's okay. Now, in a bigger picture, I don't want to take the rest of the meeting up going through my questions and the answers. So my question to Jen or to John is, I need to basically provide a response rebuttal to the questions and submit that. How do I do that? Do I basically, as a general citizen, submit that to the council? How do I get what I had written, at least to get what I had written to be included in the documentation? Or do I, and I guess I'd like to respond, how do I do that? The normal thing would have been we ask questions, we get answers, and, you know, right, and they're reasonably, you know, okay. That's not the case here. So, Jen, what are my options? What do I do? Because basically what I asked wasn't characterized correctly.
Yeah, I just wanted to say really quickly, Bart, yeah, I had shortened those questions. I had figured that the responses would be posted separately from the original questions that we received. So that was my intent in kind of rewording some of those questions. So I apologize for that.
Well, nevertheless, it happened. So, Jen, what do we do about it? I mean, if you thought of, I don't want to get into it. Okay, Jen, what do I do relative to having my questions be accurately, questions and comments be accurately portrayed, and relative to some comments back to those answers, how do I do that?
Well, for your questions, we can simply print them out, print the email out that you sent with the questions, and then they'll be in the record as we forward it to City Council. I'm not sure, and Scott can weigh in on this, or Eric, I'm not sure there's going to be another response to the questions if the response itself wasn't adequate, given that the council packet goes out on Friday. but in order to submit your questions as they were written, we could just attach your email.
Okay, well, okay, at a minimum, I would request that my questions as written be included with what goes to council. Now that starts to get a little confusing because the numbering on my questions are different than the numbering on the responses. So that's asking somebody to do a lot of work, but at the very minimum. So, I mean, I'm trying to, how do we get this so my concerns are conveyed to the city council in a way that, now the answers can be something that I don't like, that's a different question. But this gets a little confusing because like my number 10 is number, or well, 10 is 33 and 32 on Eric's responses. And if he thought, well, anyway, so where do we go from here relative to passing this information on?
Well, I guess we can attach the staff's responses to the questions email that was sent out today and attach your email with your questions, and in that way they're all in the record. We can try to go through and replace how the question was consolidated with what your actual wording was, and if the answer doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense, but at least the question is there. Yeah. I don't know if there's time to re-answer per the exact wording, so Eric or Scott will have to weigh in.
What I can do is I can pretty easily we can take the original question, and I can provide the response and put that as, you know, put that right after the original question. It, really, the reason why I consolidated all of them was we had multiple individuals provide comment. And I wanted to try to take benefit of a lot of duplicate questions, so I can say, you know, see the response to question two, see the response to question three. So that's why I put them all together. But we can very easily split those up.
Can I make a suggestion? Since Eric is on the meter, Bart, what happens if you would take the responses that we all received and paste those to a Word document, and then overlaid in italics or in red or something, your original question. So that there would be basically two questions and one answer, and turn that around tonight and have it on Jennifer's desk tomorrow morning. Again, so we don't end up, I don't know how much Eric is these days, but it's, you know, pretty steep bill. What do you think of that idea?
Fine, timing is, how soon do I need to get that back to you, Jen? Is it literally tomorrow morning?
Don't need it tomorrow morning, but we'll need it either tomorrow night or first thing Thursday morning.
Okay, I will commit to first thing Thursday morning because we're traveling tomorrow most of the day. But I commit to doing what Homer suggested by Thursday morning. Good suggestion.
Thank you.
Would you like me to respond to a couple? I just wanted to respond quickly to a couple of things, Bart, that you brought up. Yeah, the committed cost, I think that's a good point. I think with the exception of the Black and Beach contract, what we consider expended, what we're showing it or referring to as expended costs, would be committed costs. In the case of some of the things that we work with the city, our costs for invoicing and those kinds of things is the actual encumbered cost versus what's been paid by the city. So it's a little bit more up to date in terms of the record keeping. But there is provisions in the Black and Beach contract where to terminate it. There are some financial implications of that in terms of the cost for lost profits and those kinds of things. In terms of the re-baseline schedule, yeah, so essentially what we're going to be doing is tracking to the new schedule as July 1. And so everything will show essentially on schedule on July 1. We obviously always can keep the previous year's baseline schedule. And we also have the original schedule that was developed when we came on board in 2018. In terms of the compliance dates, the time schedule order is clear. We're required to submit quarterly reports to KDD Simone at the regional board. And we do that, and it says that that's the place where we are supposed to, or we're supposed to let staff know if we're missing any of those internal dates. And so that's our rationale for compliance with the time schedule orders. We have kept the regional board up to date, and we've met with them several times, most recently, probably in February of this year, just before everything started to happen and preclude us from meeting in person.
Thank you, Eric. So let's move on to Bill. Any questions for Eric?
General comment, yes, the question, I guess you made the motion or request that we approve the report as written. Well,
no, we'll just accept.
Bill, you're muted.
You didn't want to hear me anyway. So, but the report as written, I don't think we have any choice but to go ahead and move it forward. I have lots of concerns with the report. I made several, over a dozen comments that Eric nicely answered. It was obfuscated in many of them that, yep, you're right, I'll make the change. But the biggest thing is the report as it's written right now, I mean, yes, it was dated from March, but yet there's data in there regarding the meeting that's going to be held tomorrow with the Public Works Advisory Committee for the $5.9 million change. It's in a footnote. You know, so I'm not sure what the purpose of the report is, just to go into a file, but to get a report like this and end up showing numbers like on table two, why do you have in the footnote for it, you know, the $10 million, which includes the 7-point-something additional cost for the WRF, is now in management reserve or contingency instead of putting it up what the real expected cost of the WRF is right now. I can see, yep, it hasn't been approved by the city council, but yet this is a report to the city council. So, but there are a lot of changes in there. I really do appreciate table three now having been added to the report. When you look at table three, you know, it does answer lots of questions, but what it does do also, it gives one the opportunity to delete several charts that are duplicative in the rest of the report. And some of them, there are other charts that could be changed so they are consistent with table three that really does put down what the contract cost is plus what the estimate at complete is for that particular area. You know, so I think it would be very easy to go ahead and simplify the current report, shorten it, and make it a lot more readable than the one we have now. A lot of my comments are just because of the repetition of tables. Table 7 is totally repeating what's in table 3, and table 14 could be, it's a consolidation of all the contractors. But it leaves out GSI, but includes Corolla, which is covered elsewhere. So there are lots of little things, housekeeping, that could be done to make an improvement. I would like to, at some point here, make a motion that we end up working to go ahead and simplify and reduce the size of the report and eliminate the redundancies. I'll not make that motion now. But the other part of this report, at the very end, you were very kind. Eric was kind enough to go give us a PDF copy of the Microsoft Project Management Integrated Program, which is very, very difficult to look at. We saw a hard copy previously, which was almost impossible to read because print was so small. PDF becomes much easier, but it was 577 items. Big chart in the end, the Gantt chart. And so the recommendation we had was to get rid of all the completed tasks, which eliminated over 400 tasks. So it got to be a much smaller chart. And then we reduced like baseline schedule start and baseline schedule stops. And so those have all changed. And so we had fewer columns, get rid of the Gantt chart. And then we had a 3-page report that's in the very back of this, which everyone can look at. And the first quick look, which was missing some of Eric's very good explanations as to why it is the way it is. It's dated March 3rd. And when you go through it, you'll see lots of dates in there and lots of NAs, which means not applicable, which means some things have started. I can put on the chart things that you want to be thinking. The answers I got was Fish and Wildlife, when did you get the the permit. Well, that is in the schedule, but yet my answer was it wasn't a scheduled item. You know, but yet when you look at the schedule, it doesn't show that it was received on March 20th. Although now I realize the schedule that we received was a March 3rd schedule. But when you look at the schedule and then confirmations that I have sort of received, certainly it's a schedule that was built in the beginning of the program, a very good program schedule for all the planning that was necessary, all the approvals that were needed to go forward, and then the kinds of contracts you needed. But when we get, for example, we've started and got a notice to proceed for the WRF, but the schedule, the Microsoft Project Management schedule for the integrated program, it ends up showing start work and then three little items afterwards, and the next step, 500 and some odd days later, is training. You know, so I know FILAC, or FILAC, if that's the right way to pronounce it, has a very detailed schedule for the WRF. But to do oversight as a role of a advisory committee, I would advise the city council that the city should have an overall integrated project schedule, start to finish, that includes sufficient milestones along the way, even though they may not be contracted milestones for Overland and FILAC, but what are the milestones for building the WRF? You know, key ones, you know, construction started, you know, foundations laid, you know, the framing laid, plumbing and the wiring, and just enough for Joe, who now is being the overseer for the project for the city, to be able to look at that, city council, certainly for the CFAC, as we all know, in managing a project, the biggest cost increase is when you have schedule delays. And so how do you know we're on schedule unless you have a complete schedule and show what progress is? It looks like this schedule, from the information we've received so far, hasn't been kept updated, because a lot of it is we have just waited and slid the program so far to the right. As Homer pointed out, a lot of it was because of the red-legged frog and that delay. But now dates need up, many dates need to be updated, and the city should have a oversight schedule that shows the entire program. So when it comes time to make some recommendations, I'd like to make a motion that the city council task role to update the current Microsoft project management schedule to include sufficient milestones so that we can get better oversight over, so the city can have better oversight over the program. I've been working with Joe Mueller, and Bart and I have, and Joe seems very receptive to the need to have more milestones in the schedule, plus having the schedule kept up to date, which certainly appears now that it's not being kept up to date, at least the versions that we in CFAC see. That ends my comments. Pass it to the next person.
Okay, Lois.
Oh, just a couple questions. I was wondering if the WIFA loan has any covenant or other limitation stipulating the total cost of the project. So will this increase cause any problem with the WIFA loan? That's number one. You want me just to ask them all or get a response and then ask?
Yeah, why don't you ask them all and then we'll let Eric.
That would be fine. I can take notes here.
Okay. I don't have too many. With the change orders, you know, if we're not really fighting those and contesting them, we'll end up paying for them. So, at least that's my experience. So, I just want to, you know, a comment about, how those are being handled. And then, if you could explain to me the reason the construction contingency increases, from the baseline. And finally, in table one, the, conveyance facility and the recycle water facilities both show potential delays And I'm wondering what the risks are with those potential delays.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I'll start with the first one, which was the budget increase in the WIFIA loans. There is no covenant there. The WIFIA loan is essentially a $62 million line of credit that we have with them. And so an impact to the project budget does not really impact our situation with WIFIA. We are currently working with the Clean Water State Revolving Fund, who we are working with to get that loan agreement signed. They're going through the financial review, and they'll be using these most up-to-date financial numbers to figure out and make a determination of essentially how much loan amount the city can take from their program as well. So that's how those budget numbers are being looked at by the funding.
Okay.
In terms of fighting change orders, that's pretty much my main job. And a number of these change orders have been, I'd say, owner initiated. So we've identified things that we, and I say we, the collective program team and or city, have identified things that we want to add to the project to improve the project that were not specifically outlined in the RFP that was put out. And then a number of other things like, as was mentioned earlier, the impacts from the red-legged frog. One of them is it's a brand new project component. We never envisioned needing to construct a combination concrete and slatted chain link fence along the eastern side of the project, that $850,000 project component. But in terms of the process and the way that these change orders work, we get a number and we get a proposed change order from the contractor. And then our team, we have construction cost estimators on our team that review those, and we actively negotiate those different items. So very few of these change orders fall into the camp of either this is a change order or not a change order. Many of them are pretty clear that it's either a change order or not a change order. Some of them it's not, and those are the ones that, along with Scott and Rob and Joe, we're actively negotiating with the contractor to justify our position that they're either not change orders or but all of the change orders fall into a negotiation. We don't accept any of their change orders at face value, and they go through a rigorous review process on our end. And then, as I mentioned, we have our cost estimating professionals that look at those. In terms of contingency increase, I completely understand it, that it is confusing. I think the easiest way to understand it is I have a table in the PWAP presentation for tomorrow night that shows it. But essentially, if all of these things happen and how they're currently assumed right now, and if the council says, yeah, we're going to go ahead and move forward with all the change orders that have been identified, then the contingency amount that we're currently showing for the water reclamation facility before this quarterly report was about $4.2 million. The change orders that we're looking at is around $6 million. We're adding in $3 million of contingency. The $6 million would come out of that total contingency amount. So we would leave ourselves with about $1.5 million of contingency for that specific component of the project if all of those change orders are accepted by council. So does that make it a little bit clearer? It's really just a figment of the timing of the report coming to CFAC and PWAB before this goes to council and not showing it as essentially a change to the design build contract before we get to that point. In terms of delays for the conveyance facilities and the recycled water facilities, as several folks mentioned, delays can often mean additional costs. So that's a consideration for the conveyance facilities and the recycled water facilities. But in terms of the overall project schedule, the two components of the project that are most closely linked are the pipelines and the pump stations and the actual treatment plant itself. So the treatment plant's under construction, and that's going And that's a fairly independent process until they get to the point where it's time to start up that treatment plant. And so that means that they need to be able to get water to that facility. And that's where the pipeline and the pump station portion of the project comes into it. So right now we have a gap in our schedule between when those pipelines and pump stations are supposed to be completed and to when they need to be completed in order to start up the water reclamation facility. And we want to maintain that gap. Right now that gap is a little over 2 months, and we want to maintain that. And so any additional slippage in the conveyance facilities portion of the project could make and put that on the critical path and could impact the completion of the overall facility out at South Bay. So I think that's the biggest schedule risk in terms of the conveyance facilities portion of the project.
Is there a way to quantify the risk in dollars?
In terms of risk in dollars, yeah, so I think the biggest risk in dollars would be that we would need the contractor for the water reclamation facility obviously is assuming that they're going to be able to work without having any kinds of impacts from the pipelines, meaning when they're ready to start up the facility, they'll turn and turn on that facility. So we could identify what those costs are, and I can get back to you with what those would be. Likely those costs are going to be reflected in, and when we bid the project for the conveyance facilities, when we compute liquidated damages, those liquidated damages for that contractor that's going to build that pipeline in those pump stations, that'll give you a sense of what the cost, overall cost of the of scheduled delays will be, and that stuff will all be factored in there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lois. Barbara?
Thanks, John. I only have one question. It's a finance-related question for, I believe, Eric. And basically, Eric, on the very early, one of the first tables in your report on the debt service, when we look at the annual debt service that's projected now at $3.9 million versus the $4.4 million, that's a significant reduction. Has there been any attempt to quantify that in terms of ratepayer reductions? Of course, assuming that the total project stays at $130 million. But it seems that the annual debt service is a big component of this in the rates. And where are we on that? Has Bartles and Wells or anybody looked at that?
Bartle Wells hasn't looked at that. And these different numbers that I'm talking about in 2018, 2019, and 2020, there's a lot of different variables that go into calculation of those numbers. There's different assumptions, obviously on the biggest one being on the interest rates. But I think that there's a couple, at least internally, what we've discussed internally at staff level is we have two pretty critical milestones that we're looking to get over. And this is only my personal opinion before we seriously start looking at any kind of reduced collection of rates. And that would be the actual bidding of the pipeline project. So we have an engineer's estimate for the pipeline project, but we don't know what that pipeline project's actually going to cost until we go out into the market and we put it on the street and let contractors bid on it. And that is going to be happening in June, July, planning to advertise at the end of June. So that's one big milestone. The other big milestone is actually locking in the SRF loan. The interest rates for SRF haven't fluctuated too much. In the last month or so, they've gone up about 0.1% because the state sold some bonds, and so that went up from about 1.3% to 1.4%. For example, the numbers that we're using in that 2020 debt service projections that I quoted there was about a 1.7% assumed for SRF because we take the current rate, and our current practice has been to add about 0.3% when planning. And so we're looking to get that loan agreement signed by the end of the year. So those are kind of the two biggest milestones is award the project for the conveyance facilities, award date would happen in September, and then the actual signing of the loan agreement, locking in that interest rate, and then knowing essentially exactly how much the money was going to cost for the project between Lithia and SRF.
Okay.
And
Thank you. That's certainly very helpful. And I think if nothing else, maybe that's a way to soften the blow of all these increased change orders that we expected some contingencies, but we're also working in other avenues of the project that may ultimately help soften the blow or even reduce the rates. So thanks for that.
Thank you, Barbara. Tina, do you have questions for Eric?
Yes, I do. Hi, Eric.
Hi.
It's only my third meeting as a committee member, so I'm new.
Yes, nice to meet you.
Well, and it's only the first time I've seen a report. And so you've made a lot of statements since I'm almost the last person to ask questions. So I'm going to bring you back for a second to something you were discussing with Lois's list of questions. And I wanted to get clarification. I think, and it also kind of ties into some of Bill's points. And you used the phrase critical path when you were answering, Lois. Because there's these three major components to the project, do you look at the three components and their relationship to each other in a critical path report? Specifically, I'm asking that question because of what I heard someone refer to earlier, the eminent domain statement. It might have been you when you were presenting. And I think I understand that to mean it applies to the conveyance facility portion of this project. Right. And that seems significant to me because I've not actually experienced a project that needed eminent domain to be successful. But it seems that that's a pretty good sized milestone potentially. And I'm wondering how we as a committee or the public works group look at the whole enchilada and its various significant pieces or what I would think of as critical path. And using that as an example. And you had referred to this gap that you need to protect.
Mm-hmm.
So could you elaborate just a little bit more for me on that?
Yeah. So when we talk about critical path for this project, it's maybe a little bit different than a typical project because we have these three different components.
Yes.
Two of them are intimately linked and get us to our regulatory milestone, which is the February 28th of 2023. And so that's always been the focus, is making sure that we have a functional facility treating water to the state standards by that February 28th, 2023. And to do that, we need to have the facility completed and we need to have the pipelines created. Now, a very important part of this project is obviously the injection wells. But that portion of the project doesn't have to be done by that date. So when we look at our critical path and we're looking at it through that time schedule order compliance date of February 28th of 2023. Okay. And we're trying to, our goal has been to keep the pipelines off of that critical path. So that's where I refer to that gap. So right now, and I believe I responded to it in a question, because it's a couple of the dates that are not necessarily milestone dates for the purposes of the milestone schedule, but it's the substantial completion of the pipelines, and it's the startup of the water reclamation facility. And right now, as I mentioned, those are about two months apart.
Okay.
In terms of the eminent domain or the property acquisition, it's been a little bit of a sensitive topic because of the legality, because of legal implications, and so we haven't had a lot of discussion about that, but we have been going through that process, and at this point, it's not impacting the construction of the pipeline such that we would think it's going to put the pipelines on the critical path.
Okay. So thank you. And so then another clarifying question. The report that we received, if I understand, would be a quarterly report that you would create for your end of quarter, and it would come to us at the CFAC, it would go to the council, and it would go to the public works. Is that right?
Yeah, so we...
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so yeah, we develop a report on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the quarterly version of that report. The quarterly version is about, let's call it three times the size of the quarterly piece. And it comes to the CFAC and it goes to council as a consent agenda item, and we don't make a formal presentation to council.
Okay.
On the off months, the end, not the end of quarter month.
Okay, and so because when we look at the Microsoft project table that's in there, that again Bill made reference to, it's like three pages roughly, or three. There are dates in there that look like they're behind, but I don't know if I'm looking at something that isn't updated because it's based on a March, an end of March project. I mean, an end of March status. I mean, this is already May. So am I confused? Am I looking at something that really is referencing the end of March, even though we're in May? So really I'm looking at data that isn't really quite correct because I'm not looking at the monthly update.
Yeah, and okay. And so that is the challenge that we have been dealing with. It's so just to give you an idea of kind of the timing in a typical month that we're looking at. So the end of the month closes, and we typically are dealing with about, I would say, 6 to 10 invoices from different members of the project that are working. That are working on the project. So we're getting invoices from 10 different consultants or contractors that we have to go through, and we need to review, and we need to approve or have them updated and then put them through the system and then be able to reflect what the monthly expenditures are. And then that becomes even more important on the quarterly because we want to know what we've spent to date or what's been encumbered to date in order for us to put together the revised projections. So right now, the way that schedule works, and I'll use May as an example. So May ended, April ended, and based on our internal deadlines, we would turn around our monthly report by May 13th. That's when we would have to have a report ready to be able to go to CFAP to be published so we could go to CFAP in that following week. That really only gives us in the month of May about a week and a couple of days to get invoices from all the contractors and consultants working on the project, review those, approve those, and update all the financial numbers and get everything to you. And that's going to be even more difficult, especially as we start working through and we get into construction. So we've now been under construction. Yeah. It's volume, but it's also the nature of the review that we have to do.
Right.
We have to go through and we have to check compliance with prevailing wage, and we've got a bunch of different things that we have to do. Plus, it's fairly easy to review invoices from consultants. You're looking at hours, and you're looking at other direct costs for travel and those kinds of things. Fairly straightforward. Right. With construction, it's a little bit of a different animal because we're looking at materials, labor. We've got to make sure that what they've saying they've done, that they've actually done, and it's just not as easy as an exercise, and it takes more time. It takes more time for them to prepare their monthly applications for payment or their invoices, and it takes more time for us to review. And so that's kind of the reason why it's becoming increasingly more difficult to take in the month and then turn around a report to CFAP like a week and a half after that month is closed, because we either don't have all of the information or we're still reviewing a lot of the information that's come in at the close of the previous month.
Well, CFAC has changed its rhythm in terms of how often it meets, and the next meeting is in July. I'm not sure, John. I'm guessing it's got to be on this time, or 18th or something of the month.
Right. It's July 21st, actually.
Is that right?
And it's to review the report out at the end of June is the reason for a July meeting.
It should be the end of June because that's the end of the quarter.
No, but the report comes out in the end of June, beginning of July, and we meet in July to review the report.
That's what I'm saying, but my internet cut out. So I'm saying in July, our report should be pretty close to our timing of our meeting and the issuance of their report should be pretty close.
Just to clarify, the schedule information, which was your initial question, should be unbelievably up to date because that's done literally on a weekly basis.
Okay.
The cost information clearly is going to have a lag. And most of Eric's answer had to do with
cost
information. But your question was, is the schedule that's dated March 3rd or June, whatever it is.
Right.
And literally they review this, as we understand it, weekly. So the schedule would, quite frankly, literally be that week. Cost information could be 2 months old.
Yeah. I was primarily, you're correct, primarily interested in schedule at this point. Obviously, cost is critical, but, you know, schedule.
This is a debate that we have all the time with programs and the way that we report out things. And we can report out schedule information and say that the schedule information is essentially going to be whatever's cut off, you know, the week prior to development of the report. But the financial information may be a little bit older, and we can do it that way and we can report it that way. That's not necessarily the way that we've been reporting it out. To Bart's point, we meet and update the schedule on a weekly basis, but we may, for the purposes of development of the report, have the cutoff date at the end of March. For the report that you're seeing now, the cutoff date is the end of March. It's not the, you know, it wasn't the second week or the first week of May. We can change that, and we can show it that way if people are okay with it. Again, it's one of those things that always is a challenge about, the timing of when data is received and how that jives with the reporting period.
I'm not at a stage of information where I would make that kind of motion or recommendation, mm-hmm. certainly. And I appreciate you taking the time to explain some things to me, because I do have project management experience, but not on the level of what you're working with right now. And so when I look at a report like that, I'm trying to understand the context of what I'm looking at in a time frame. And based on comments that had come before, I realized that I might be I don't want to bring questions that are no good. I mean, because they're obsolete. You know what I'm saying? So this helps.
Yeah, we can, and that's a good. I'm glad you brought up this point. Like I said, it's one of the things that we talked about, and it's a little bit of a different mindset, because even our schedulers, they work on different projects, and different projects do things differently, and they have to every time that I sit down with that team, we have to remember that we're working on Morro Bay now, and this is the way that we try to report out schedule and keep track of things, and if everybody's okay with seeing the most updated information in terms of schedule and having the financial maybe be a little bit different. And if we can work through that together, it frankly makes our job easier, and it makes the information that you get, I would say, more valuable, because it's more up to date. So we can do that.
Well, hey, John, by my questions, I'm not trying to assume that I have the right to make a change to how something is done on a project of this magnitude. But is there some action here that I am found myself in the middle of and don't recognize? I.e., is there a motion, a valid motion, that something go back to the council, or that life can be made easier perhaps for everybody if we approach it with an accurate schedule, but a recognized and known delay on the financials? And guys, it's 5:22, and I don't want to turn this into a how many angels on the head of a pin with 6 minutes to go. But I'm trying to get guidance here on how to go forward.
John, I want to have a suggestion.
Well, okay, go ahead.
Wouldn't take any effort, I wouldn't think. What about on the cover sheet? Eric would just put schedule and a date through, you know, and financial and a date. Just add it to the cover sheet below his name.
Can I chime in, John? Okay, yes.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, okay. So just want to note that every time this item has been brought to CFAC, there's been recommended changes to the report. And, you know, I don't know how long it's been, about maybe a year now. So, I think council has done tweaking the report, but you certainly can make the request to them. And also note that the meeting does need to wrap up soon, and you need to get to public comment for this item. Thank you.
Well, Scott, I didn't mean to put my foot in it.
No, not at all. I just wanted to make sure that was...
I recognize from having done this for a living that it's a pain in the ass, but go to public comments. I just wasn't sure if I had, in fact, some responsibility based on the way the questions were going.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd like to come back. I didn't ask any question when I was talking to Eric. But Eric, do you see opportunity to go ahead and simplify and reduce the size of the report and get rid of some of the redundancy, like get rid of table 7 and there are many other areas that would simplify it? And in that, we could take a look at making the change that Homer suggested. But is there some value to go take a look at some improvements like that?
I will say that all of those tables in the report have some value to myself or others that are looking at the project. It's different ways of looking at a couple of different items. But in the sense of us, there are some things that are redundant. There could be some tables that are removed or simplified. In terms of, shortening the work effort, in terms of duration or effort, not a lot there, but, if there's something that people really don't want to see, then some things could be removed. But.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill. So I just have a couple questions for Eric, and this one question might be for Scott. Maybe it can't be answered yet. Is the city the fee simple owner of the South Bay Boulevard land now?
Of the Tri-W site, and we have right of access to the other part, and we're still working through the final stages of completing the purchase for that piece.
So the construction site is owned by the city?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, and do you have a final purchase price that you can make public on that?
I want to say it's around $300,000, but Eric can probably give you more concrete numbers if you need that right now.
I don't need it right now, but I think it's a question I've asked before and there was no answer. So.
Because of some of the sensitivity, obviously, with negotiation. But John, yeah, that's public information, and as we're talking here, I can look up the exact amount.
Okay. The only other thing, on the issue of an eminent domain, the city actually can take immediate possession of those easements without actually having paid compensation to the owners of the property. So that wouldn't delay construction, right?
That is more or less the direction that's been provided by council. It still needs to go through the proceedings, and that could be an outcome of those proceedings, or there could be a different ruling by the judge.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. With that, we had a motion by Bill in regards to the Microsoft project schedule update, and I think that's something that maybe is more rightfully handled outside of this committee. Scott, I don't know, you've had discussions with both Bill and Bart about the project schedule, and is that something that you feel this committee should be looking at that detail, or what is your opinion on that?
If the committee finds it to be useful to sort of connect to the financial, I think you make that recommendation and see what council thinks. As I've explained to both Mr. Beckman and Bose, is that, you have two advisory bodies reviewing the project. One's looking technical, the other, this committee's looking at financial, and the schedule could probably fall to both, right, in some respects. So if the committee felt it was appropriate and useful in your discussions, I would make that I would have you make that recommendation as a group to the city council. But we have had discussions with the two of them, and to help them understand how we're managing the project, and they've made some useful suggestions. And so I'll leave it at that.
Can I ask a quick question, John, before we go?
Go ahead.
Financial question, Eric, to follow Bill's suggestions, what sort of numbers are we talking about?
What are you talking
about? Can you clarify in terms of additional effort or
Yeah, in other words, you or your staff or whoever has to do the work, and obviously something that would be done by the Carrillo organization.
May I interrupt, Homer?
Sure. Well, I don't care. I'm out. You understand the question.
Yeah, if we're going to update these, I would just take the report and just provide, here's a way to simplify it. Change these things. Be easy. The other, follow on what Mr. Collins ended up saying, I've been working with Joe and as has Bart, and I think we're providing some useful information for improving the schedule for greater visibility, which I think Joe Mueller needs in his role of providing oversight over the overall schedule. And I'd like to just continue with that. And it just needs Scott's concurrence to go do that. And so we'll continue to march forward and provide whatever advice we can that's helpful.
I don't question the value. I just want to, you know, it's like everything else. When the plumber comes, I ask him how much it's going to cost. That's okay. All.
Homer, let's separate the two issues. The improvements to the report, while I think they're valid, would take some amount of effort and thought to go through it. To do the schedule information, it means hit the print button. The schedule is updated weekly, and to have that schedule, the current schedule, be there, there is zero extra work. And in fact, there's more work associated with keeping an old schedule to print with a quarterly report. So the two issues, there is some amount of effort, obviously, to streamline the report. There would be value, but some effort. The schedule is literally, you hit print. And you include that report when you submit it.
Okay, well, the motion that Bill made was in regards to the Microsoft project schedule. So that is not going to require a lot of work. So do we have a...
Yeah.
So, Bill, can you repeat that motion, what you were thinking about? I'm not talking about revising the report, the quarterly report that Eric's doing. I'm talking about that detail schedule, the Microsoft project schedule that Bill, you made.
I move that the Microsoft project management schedule be updated with additional milestones between now and the end of the project and updated frequently and shared with the city.
Okay, so can we get a second for that?
I'll second.
Okay, any other discussion on that?
I'd sure like to have Eric tell us that it's just hit the button.
It's not, because there are additional milestones that need to be added. Because right now the milestone is break ground, then do training for the WRF.
You know, we have an integrated schedule that takes into account all the efforts that everybody's doing. For construction of the WRF, the contractor has a 42-page Primavera P6 schedule that they provide every month when they give us an invoice. We review that schedule. Our construction manager reviews that in detail when he reviews their invoice. We take the pertinent information from that schedule and we use it to update a handful of line items in our schedule so that we are not recreating a 42-page schedule in the middle of what is our, our schedule is 5 pages long. So that would add quite a bit of work. And so we don't do that. We don't recreate the contractor schedule, which he controls, in our schedule. What we do is we use it to modify the critical dates that we think, are necessary, in terms of substantial completion, final completion, the startup of the facility and those things we do update in our schedule. There would be, yes, that would add more work if we were to add more milestones to our schedule. We can also provide the 42-page P6 schedule if anybody wants to see those as well, the contractor's 42-page schedule.
If there's anything you really look at are the uncompleted tasks, and you don't need to look at all 42. You can then just look at the critical path for each of those areas. You know, so it's, and it would be helpful to have an over view of the entire program as opposed to just start and stop and nothing in between. So.
Any other discussion?
No, I did. What I'm repeating is something that Joe Mueller and I have talked about, and Joe believes he needs to be able to do proper oversight of the project. So it's not something the city doesn't need. I mean, at Scott's level, he doesn't need to get into the details that Joe does. And it isn't the 40 some odd pages of milestones, but just a few key milestones in construction. And all the activities from this point forward have to be rescheduled because we haven't set the bid out yet for the conveyance facilities. And that's been discussed here earlier.
Okay, well, we're beyond 5:30 now, so I'm going to go ahead and call the question. All those in favor of the motion?
John, you need to open a public comment, I believe, unless we did it all at the beginning of the meeting. I just want to make...
I apologize. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. So, Zeke, is there anyone queued up for public comment on this item?
There are people in the queue, but nobody has their hand raised.
Okay. Then
there is one now. Just a moment.
Okay.
Okay, caller.
Hello, this is Dan Sedley from Morro Bay, and I have a question for the CFAC. Is there or is there not a component of this $6 million increase or more that pertains to paying Black & Veatch in excess of $1 million for a delay of this project? Are they being paid a delay fee for doing absolutely nothing? And if this is a component of this, why is it not being discussed and why is it not being negotiated or of concern to this committee? That's my question.
Eric, can you answer that, please?
There are two change orders that are being considered that are resulting from the delay of the project, essentially not issuing the construction notice to proceed last October of 2019. One of those has to do with additional general condition costs, essentially. Black & Veatch brought staff on board anticipating a notice to proceed in October. Those people expended effort against the project. Black & Veatch provided a backup for that cost that was reviewed. We very strongly negotiated that with Black & Veatch, and that is one of the change orders that we are discussing, is essentially their staff cost for a construction project that didn't start until about 5 months after they had anticipated it was going to start. So there is a cost there. The other cost has to do with the cost of money, because the project started later than they anticipated. The project is going to end later, and as people have pointed out, time is money, and the cost of goods increase over time. And so there is an escalation that goes into factoring that cost. Now, I wanted everyone to take note. And I know we talked about this before, these are not to exceed cost increases. So when Black & Veatch asks for an increase for escalation, they are doing that to cover the anticipated increase in the cost of construction materials and labor and those things to get the project done. If that money is not spent, then the city doesn't pay them that money. That increases the total not to exceed amount, but it isn't that we are automatically going to pay them that additional amount of money. So there is a bit of a nuance there in terms of how it can be discussed. But those are the two cost increase elements that are out there.
Thank you, Eric. And as to why we didn't bring it up, it was in the report and there were questions asked about it and those questions were answered. And so I think that's the reason it didn't come up. Okay, so... all those in favor of the motion on the floor. You signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, all those opposed?
Without knowing the, how much it's going to cost, the answer is no.
Correct. I as well.
I'm going to vote opposed.
Okay, Barbara, just to verify, Barbara, what was your vote?
Opposed.
Opposed. Okay, so 4 in favor, 3 opposed. The motion, hopefully Tracy got that. Okay, so we are done with this item. Let's move on to item C, future agenda items. Jennifer, what do you have for us?
So July, there'll be another quarterly report for the WARF. We'll have the investment report for the third quarter. And I can provide the adopted budget at that point for review. Should be adopted by then, but it would include all the funds for the committee to look over and provide comment.
Jennifer, that's for 2021, correct, budget?
Yes.
Thank you.
And Jennifer, can I make a recommendation that you not hold up that third quarter investment report from the council? You know, if you have it ready, I think you should send it to the council, even though we haven't seen it because, you know, it's so delayed.
Okay.
What does everybody else think? I mean, it doesn't.
I agree. It's pretty standard. Jen, you could send it all out to us so we could just virtual or electronically give you feedback by email.
Okay, I can do that. It likely won't go until June if it does go anyways, and we're pretty dedicated to budget right now, so I'm not sure if we're going to have all of the July meetings, so may not have a chance to go before July, but if it does, I can take note of that and send out to the committee if that's what everybody agrees to.
Sounds good to me.
I have a possible future agenda item. I'd like to have Jennifer and Eric review the process that the city's planning to use to be reimbursed from the federal government and from the state government. What the logistics are of what's the flow of invoices and, you know, that's how it's all going to work. And the anticipated lag between the invoice being created and the check being received. Just some general background kind of information about that.
Can I include in that discussion a B part of that? And that's to review the procedures being developed for the submittal of the reimbursements. They are sort of connected.
That's what I had in mind, Bart, exactly.
Well, I guess there's two issues. One, the timing, which is why having this new schedule and cash flow be put in place for, like, when do we think these are going to happen and how do we coordinate them, and the actual submittal to make sure that's it's clear on how to do that so they're going to give us the money back first time, which they didn't do with the loan.
Well, I'm sure that that's probably been worked out. I would just like to have them just go through a flow chart of how they think it's going to work. That's all. Just so we all know. Since it is
the same thing. That's right. I agree.
Yeah, it's $100 million. So, you know.
So, Jennifer, if you can squeeze that in, that might be useful information going forward for sure.
Sure.
You can't hold the state or federal governments to anything. They're going to do what they do. So you can come up with your best guess, but as to how it actually happens, we have to wait and see.
Well, we actually had a meeting planned for last week with WIFIA and the new kind of project team that we'll be working with on the submittal side, and that got canceled on their end. So we're trying to set that up with them so we can understand the submittal process and what they need as well. So we're looking at getting that rescheduled for this week.
Okay, thank you.
Will the agenda include the review of the additional roles that have been given to CFAC? Is that covered?
my interpretation of those rules is when there's a quarterly report on the agenda, you can have that discussion under that because it's part of your review of the quarterly report and what information you need to have to meet those additional rules. I don't think it needs to be a separate agendized item unless there is no WARF quarterly report on the agenda. And July is a quarterly report update.
But we were given the task on February 11th, and we did not talk about it at the last CFAC meeting because it wasn't on the agenda. It's not on the agenda this time. We have four additional roles. Now, how are those roles to be fulfilled by the CFAC? That's the question that needs to be agendized to talk about it. Am I not making sense, or are we not communicating with each other?
Maybe we're talking different languages. My understanding and impression would be that the four additional roles are part of the committee's review of the quarterly report, part of the committee's review of the WARF, the quarterly report in those roles. As long as there is a WARF quarterly report on the committee agenda, you can have a discussion of what those roles are and how you need to, what information you need. If you want it as a separate agendized item, I'm happy to do that. I don't think it's necessary to do that unless there is not a quarterly report on the agenda.
I didn't interpret it that way. I interpreted
it. If the committee would like to have a separate agendized item in July, just let me know and I'm happy to do that.
And since the mayor was the one that pronounced all that, maybe he could chime in and tell us what he thought he meant by those four additional tasks.
Well, it's broader than WRF. It wasn't just WRF, clearly.
That was my understanding too, Bill.
Yeah. So let's put it on the agenda.
We'll take a look at it and see if we can pull that together for the July meeting. Staff has a lot of things we're working on with the COVID-19, and we'll be getting more information as we go. So we'll do our best to respond to that. You know, the mayor can't speak today. He can't speak for the full council what his interpretation of this was. So we'll need to sit back down and talk about it, make sure we have, you know, go over the tape, make sure we bring back something that's useful if we can.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Okay, so our next meeting is July 21st at 3 p.m. And Scott, I'm assuming that it's going to be a Zoom meeting again.
At this point, I would assume the next couple months at least would be in that setup.
Okay.
We'll let you know as soon as possible if things change. But right now, I think we'll expect that for at least a couple more months.
Okay. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.